to TYT. I'm Anna Kasparian, and joining us today is Mark Thompson. Cenk is out for yet another day, but it's okay. Also on set, J.R. Jackson. No one ever mentions you when they start the show,
and I feel like there's a problem. You know, it should be the first.
All right, I hope you guys are having an awesome day. There is a ton of news to get to, and of course, we will dive right into the interview that Trump had with the New York Times. And then remember to use the hashtag TYTLive to tweet to us throughout the show, and we will read your tweets during the break and respond to some of them when we come back from the break. And then a few announcements before we get started with the news.
Anna loves doing these announcements. She loves it. Just bring me more announcements to do.
I was complaining about it like right before we aired. All right, so TYT Old School, there's an episode available for members to watch. Apparently, the conversation yesterday had something to do about whether or not it's acceptable if someone knowingly spreads an STD to someone. This is involving a story regarding a celebrity. I just feel like, I don't want to talk about it. But anyway, I just feel bad. It sounds gossipy to me. But, you know, Old School has fun, so you guys should check it out.
They do have gossipy aspects.
They do, yeah. They do. It was hosted by Cenk, Michael Shore, J.R. Jackson, and Ben Mankiewicz. So you guys should check it out. All right, TYTnetwork.com/join. All right, guys, let's get started with the New York Times interview with Donald Trump. And he, if you just want a quick summary, he decided to shit on pretty much everyone and blame everyone around him for his failures. So let's get to the first person that he decided to throw under that bus.
Sessions gets the job. Right after he gets the job, he recuses himself.
Was that a mistake?
Well, Sessions should have never recused himself. And if he was going to recuse himself, he should have told me before he took the job, and I would have picked somebody else.
Mm-hmm. He gave you no heads up at all. Mm-hmm.
Zero. Okay. So Jeff Sessions takes the job, gets into the job, recuses himself. I then have, which frankly, I think is very unfair to the president. How do you take a job and then recuse yourself? If he would have recused himself before the job, I would have said, thanks, Jeff, but I can't, you know, I'm not going to take you. It's extremely unfair, and that's a mild word, to the president.
So Jeff Sessions is still his attorney general, right? So he's still working with Jeff Sessions. And so this interview is strange considering the fact that he did just openly say, well, if I would have known that he would have recused himself, I would have never hired him. I would have never given him the job. And it's just interesting to see that level of transparency, although I'm not saying transparency in a positive way. I'm saying it in a critical way.
Yeah, he speaks in a very unvarnished way when he is talking about protecting himself. You know, he says very unfair to the president, but of course, recusing himself was surprisingly the fairest thing that Jeff Sessions could do to the process, to the investigative process, right? So, but of course, Donald Trump doesn't care about the investigative process. He cares about himself. And everything he says in service of that, he says in a very unvarnished way. And so, Jeff Sessions is not the first and not the last to feel this sense of being thrown under the bus, as Anna says.
And just to be clear, though, Trump cares about this investigation. He cares deeply about this investigation.
Oh, clearly. In fact, this is evidence that he feels that heat.
Right. I mean, and there's been so much evidence regarding how much he cares about this investigation. I mean, he was transparent about the reason why he fired Comey. He openly said he fired Comey because of his part in investigating possible collusion with Russia. And so it's fascinating to see him, you know, take shots at those closest to him in this administration. JR?
Can we first think about the way this works? The way he thinks this works. He thinks Jeff Sessions is his presidential attorney. He thinks the attorney general is to represent the president and protect him from anything that could possibly come towards him, because that's where his life has been. He's got a team of attorneys to protect him from all the nefarious backhanded deals that he has always done. So he's like, why would I hire an attorney general in Jeff Sessions if he's going to recuse himself? When you hired Jeff Sessions, the investigations weren't launched yet. You were just elected. You idiot. So why would Jeff Sessions know, hey, they're going to launch all these investigations into all the nefarious things you've been doing. I should not take the job because I'm going to recuse myself in the future from protecting you from all the investigations that haven't even happened yet. He doesn't know how it works.
But I think, look, I totally agree that it's very likely that he doesn't know how it works, right? But even so, he is under the impression that people around him need to be loyal to him at any and all costs. Forget about fairness, forget about the democratic process, forget about democracy, forget about the American people. You need to be loyal to Donald Trump regardless of the situation. And so that's what he's really angry about. Right.
And he doesn't connect those dots that JR is talking about. And JR, I don't think he's really even bothering to figure out the logic. What he is doing is he's doing what Anna's talking about, which is making a statement. And this is not an accident. He's saying, hey, Jeff Sessions and all of you who serve in my administration, loyalty to me is the only priority of this administration. And so he quite deliberately isn't doing the math on when the investigation started and all the rest. I think he just wants to make that point.
Yes. And so there was a few more comments that he made in regard to Jeff Sessions, and it had to do with his confirmation hearings. So remember, Jeff Sessions got into a little bit of trouble because he didn't disclose the fact that he had met with the Russian ambassador on two different occasions. And so Trump decided to comment on that specific portion of, you know, this entire debacle. And he said Jeff Sessions gave some bad answers. He gave some answers that were simple questions and should have been simple answers, but they weren't. I agree with you on that. Why is it that he didn't disclose that he had those two meetings with the Russian ambassador? Who knows? But Jeff Sessions was asked about Trump's comments while he was giving a press conference in regard to something completely different. Press conference had to do with, you know, the black market sale of illicit products. And of course, the reporters had less interest in that and more interest in hearing Sessions' thoughts on Trump's comments. Take a look.
Given what he said, what is your reaction to those remarks? And how seriously are you considering possibly resigning?
We in this Department of Justice will continue every single day to work hard to serve the national interest. And we wholeheartedly join in the priorities of President Trump. I have the honor of serving as Attorney General. It's something that goes beyond any thought I would have ever had for myself. We love this job. We love this department. And I plan to continue to do so as long as that is appropriate.
All right. So, you know,
that's the kind of statement that so many in the White House are kind of used to making, which is to sort of ignore the specifics of whatever the president said and just make a statement about how much you love your job and how much you love serving this country. I'll remind you who Jeff Sessions is, though. He's not a good guy. He's someone who has really not acted on the part of those who are not served by the judicial system, the underclass that need the Justice Department. He is not their representative in Washington. You'll remember he backed President Trump on his advertisement for the Central Park Five. You recall that entire, and the Central Park Five who were exonerated of that horrible incident. So Jeff Sessions is not one of the good guys, but he finds himself opposite the president at this moment in time anyway.
I know, it's really interesting. It's interesting to see people that you dislike for good reason, you know, fighting with one another. And, you know, Jeff Sessions, standard politician, he comes out there with his poker face. But make no mistake, I mean, hearing the commander in chief, the president, talk about you so negatively to a major news outlet can't be fun. Let's hear a little more from Sessions.
How do you feel like you can effectively serve from here on out if you don't have the confidence of the president?
We're serving right now. The work we're doing today is the kind of work that we intend to continue. But I really would like for you to focus now on the work of the individuals behind me that have helped put this case together.
Okay, in both of the videos that we just showed you guys, it starts with Jeff Sessions far away from the podium and then awkwardly walking toward the podium to answer the question, why does he walk away? In between questions, it's so strange. Can we just watch the beginning of the last video? I don't know, it really stood out to me for some reason. Okay, she's asking the question, what's going on? Why does Trump suck so much? In both of the videos. I don't know, it's just interesting.
Well, I mean, and maybe, you know, they're presenting other law enforcement officers and people maybe from DOJ who are associated with the opiate, if that's what he was talking about originally. Mm-hmm. So maybe he's kind of trying to take his place in line, but you're right, it has an odd optic you know.
It really does, and he has like that smirk on his face. Anyway, so
he's got a weird look to begin with. He's kind of got a munchkin-y look, you know what I mean? So to be fair, I think a lot of situations help make it a little more awkward.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. All right. Well, there was one other quick portion of that press conference featuring Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, and I want to show you that portion because of a comment a reporter made after the fact. So take a quick look at this video.
Deputy Attorney General Rosenstein, the president told the New York Times yesterday that the fact that you're from Baltimore concerns him, since there aren't many Republicans from that city. Is that something that's a valid concern in your view? What do you make of that criticism?
As the Attorney General said, we are working here every day to advance the priorities of the Department of Justice, the administration. And as the Attorney General said, we're happy to answer any questions about this Alpha Bay case. It's a very important case. We got a lot of folks here who assisted in that investigation, and that's all I'm going to talk about today. Thank you.
Any questions about Alpha Bay? All right, thank you.
It's not about Alpha Bay. Are you concerned you'll be seen as a zombie Attorney General?
Are you afraid to be seen as a zombie Attorney General? All right, well, Jeff Sessions was one person who was criticized by Trump during that interview, but there was also criticism directed toward James Comey, which you should expect. But the accusations that Trump made in regard to James Comey, in my opinion, just give you a sense of how distrustful he is, how paranoid he is, and how even if someone comes with him or comes to him with information that could be helpful, you know, for strategy purposes, Trump thinks that no, these people have the worst intentions in mind. So let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. So according to the New York Times, Mr. Trump recalled that Mr. Comey and other intelligence officials briefed him at Trump Tower on Russian meddling. Mr. Comey afterwards pulled Mr. Trump aside and told him about a dossier that had been assembled by a former British spy filled with salacious allegations against the incoming president, including supposed sexual escapades in Moscow. Now, for those of you who might have missed that story, and this has never been corroborated, it was the whole thing about how Trump hired prostitutes to urinate on a bed that Obama allegedly slept on. Those accusations, that's the dossier we're talking about. Now, Comey came to him with that story before it broke. So in this interview with the New York Times, Donald Trump said, in my opinion, he shared it, so I would think he had it out there. And the reporter says, as leverage? He's like, yeah, I think so, in retrospect. So he thinks that Comey was using that as leverage against him, when in reality, Comey was trying to help him out and be like, bro, like there's a little bit of an issue here. I just want to make sure it's, you know, at the top of your mind so you deal with it. But he didn't see it as helpful.
Yeah, I mean, even if you kind of accept it as squishy in terms of the truth, it's Comey saying, hey, this is out there, and he's looking for a firm denial from Trump or something along those lines. It was clear that Comey was tentative, to say the least, about his relationship with the president, and he felt this is a very unstable situation, and it's frankly one that a lot of people view as unstable. But it's hard to see that he had any knives out for Trump early on, and yet, obviously, after the fact, it's all coming to, it becomes quite obvious that Trump essentially dumped him purely for the Russia investigation. And just on the Russia investigation, and Anna's so right, he feels the heat of this Russia investigation. All roads and all responses lead back to something concerning Russia. And you can also see the way the White House is falling apart right now. They are all scattering because it is unclear who's going to really bear this responsibility and be hung out to dry. The president is hanging people out to dry every day.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's interesting because he expects loyalty from others, but he's not very loyal to anyone, right? He will throw people around him under the bus for the smallest thing, and that's what we've been noticing so far. All right, well, there is another part of this interview that I think is really important, especially given the healthcare debate that's happening in the United States right now. As Congress tries to grapple with their intentions of repealing and replacing the Affordable Care Act, Donald Trump has decided that, you know, he hasn't really figured out what he wants more, and any option that goes against the Affordable Care Act is a good option for him. So during Trump's interview with the New York Times, he explained some of the difficulties involving the repeal and replace plan for the Affordable Care Act. And in doing so, he attempted to detail what he thinks healthcare is, but he kind of showed that he's a little ignorant on healthcare policy. So if you don't believe me, I'm going to read you his response to the New York Times verbatim. He said, as they get something, it gets tougher because politically you can't give it away. So pre-existing conditions are a tough deal because you are basically saying from the moment the insurance, you're 21 years old, you start working and you're paying $12 a year for insurance, and by the time you're 70, you get a nice plan. Here's something where you walk up and say, I want my insurance. It's a very tough deal, but it is something that we're doing a good job of. What? I don't know. There are parts of that answer where I don't even know what he's talking about. The notion that when you're young and healthy, you only spend $12 a year, not even $12 a month. He said $12 a year on insurance is absurd. And then he thinks of insurance, the way that he spoke about health insurance sounded like he was confusing it for life insurance.
Right.
You know, and you hear those life insurance commercials on CNN, along with Super Beta prostate commercials, where they're like, yeah, $12 a month. And then by the time you're like ready to die, we're going to give you $500,000. So he thinks that's the way it works.
Yeah, because that's where he gets his information from, the cable news.
Oh, my God, it's terrible.
No, it's he was completely at sea as to what he was talking about. And then, as Anna says, he was obviously confusing health insurance and life insurance. He certainly doesn't know any specifics, and we'll get to that in a second, about the health care bill. He doesn't know many specifics about many things. Remember, this is a president who is briefed in one-page briefings, preferably those that include his name repeatedly. This is not me just being cute. This is literally what they do at the White House. So it doesn't surprise me that he's adrift on this.
Right, and he's not a fan of briefings. He's been pretty clear about that. And it's obvious in his answers to some of these questions. But what's interesting is, you know, when someone gets to a point where they feel confident enough to run as the leader of this country and one of the most powerful people in the world, you would think that they would just know how the world works at least a little bit. And it seems like he's completely oblivious to some of the most important components of our lives. But he is also oblivious in regard to his own ignorance. In fact, he thinks he's super intelligent on this topic. He says so himself. He says, these guys couldn't believe it, talking about members of Congress and people around him, how much I know about it. I know a lot about healthcare. No, you don't. No, you don't. You never talk about details or specifics. And then when you make the mistake of doing so, you sound like you don't know anything at all.
Yeah. Look, he is not short on confidence. He's an egomaniacal megalomaniac, right? And he just can't wait to tell you how great he is. In fact, it's probably the only thing he can speak with some authority on. Everything else is being brought to him. He is simply he's simply the pretty face of this presidency. And yeah. And you know, that's the key thing to remember here. This is a popularity contest, and Anna mentioned it a moment ago, and I thought it's a good point. You know, how can anyone ascend to this level and not have some working understanding of government or policies or how things work? Well, because of the way we elect presidents this way, in this time, in this culture, in this moment, because it's a popularity contest. And one thing he does well, and I've said it before here, he messages so effectively. And there are people who drink in that message. And it's a cult of personality. So from his standpoint, all he has to do is deliver that cult of personality. And that's what he does.
That is what he does. He doesn't really know when Congress votes on anything. So I want to give you this exchange with the reporter, Maggie Haberman. He says, well, I say, let's not vote on repeal. Let's just vote on this. So first, they vote on the vote, and that happens sometime Friday. Maggie Haberman responds, next week. Or Monday? Monday. And then they'll vote on this and we'll see. We have some meetings scheduled today. I think we have six people who are really sort of okay. They're all good people. We don't have bad people. I know the bad people. Believe me, do I know bad people? Oh my God. Okay, well, if you're not alarmed by his lack of knowledge or his ignorance on this incredibly important issue, you're not alone, because Senator Bill Cassidy feels the same way. Take a look.
So then in your conversations with him, do you think the president understands the political, the policy intricacies of this bill?
I don't think it's important for him to understand the policy intricacies of this bill. What's important for him is to understand the principle. His principle is that there should be a replace associated with repeal.
Okay.
That's exactly what we were just talking about.
Yeah.
Right? It's not important that he understand it. It's just important that he beat Trump, that he lean into these people and say, hey, look, we got a price to pay if you don't follow along with the White House script. Yeah, it's completely disheartening to see the GOP fall in line behind this guy.
Yeah, fall in line, especially when it comes to something that has to do with life and death situations. Something that so many Americans rely on, depend on, and need real leadership on. And for them, it's just a game of patty cakes. For them, this is all fun and games, and it's pathetic. To say the least.
To play party politics with these things that affect so many lives. And he's such a populist president in that weird way. In other words, he rode to power on the backs of so many people who need health care and really need government help. It's the true irony. It's been made that point time and time again. But as Anna says, this is a community of Americans that is going to be dropping through the floor if they roll back what's on the books.
Exactly. All right, guys. Tweet to us using the hashtag TYT Live. We are going to go to break. When we come back, some new information on Mueller's investigation on Donald Trump. He's not going to like it. We're going to give you the details on that. And we will read some of your tweets when we come back. Welcome back to TYT, Anna and Mark with you. Lots of really great TYT Live, so I want to read them to you. Keld Visser says, love Mark and Anna on hour one.
Aww.
Also says, your president is a narcissistic idiot. Good luck. So that's nice. Kimberly Colbert or Colbert, keep your friends close and your enemies in your administration.
That's a good t-shirt.
It's so easy to become an enemy with him.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Because any little misstep, I had read, and I look, take this with a grain of salt because I don't know how true this story is, but I had read that his opinion of Chris Christie changed after Chris Christie tried to hand him a cell phone or a phone that had like germs on it, because you know he's a germaphobe. And so like that little thing made him change his mind about Chris Christie.
I watched just because you're talking about it, I watched a video, and maybe you'll be able to remember where this is just yesterday. I saw a video of Trump and a bunch of people trying to decide if it should say made in the, you know, this is part of his Made in America thing, whether it should say Made in America or Made in the USA on the label. And he's got a whole room full of people and he's going around, Bob, what do you think? Made in America or Made in the USA on that label? And you could see people
kind of nervous,
not sure how to answer. He had not indicated how he felt it should read. And as they're going around the room, it's what you're talking about. Like if I answer the wrong way, you know, he may drag me out back and have me, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't have hired Joe Schmo if I would have known that he'd say Made in America.
Right. You know? Yeah.
Anyway, Danger, Carlos Danger says, so how do I get on this $12 a year healthcare plan? It leaves more money for $16 avocado toast. Sounds good to me. Let's do it. Just love it. So good. All right, let's get to some more news. Donald Trump criticized many people surrounding him during his interview with the New York Times, and he even had some comments in regard to Mueller and Mueller's investigation into possible collusion with Russia. Now, I want you guys to hear what he had to say about Mueller, and then I'm going to give you some additional details on this ongoing investigation. Take a look.
Mueller was looking at your finances, your family's finances, unrelated to Russia. Is that a red line?
Would that be a breach of what his actual?
I would say yes. Yeah, I would say yes. By the way, I would say I don't. I mean, it's possible that it's condo or something. So you know, I sell a lot of condo units, and somebody from Russia buys a condo. Who knows? I don't make money from Russia. Mm-hmm. In fact, I put out a letter saying that I don't make from one of the most highly respected law firms and accounting firms.
He put out a letter saying he doesn't take money from Russia. I mean, it must be true. I mean, if you put out a letter saying that you're not doing something, it must be true. Must be true. So he said that Mueller looking into his family's business dealings and business transactions would be a red line. Well, Mueller has decided to cross that red line, and I love it because this is something that has bothered me not only in regard to what's going on with Russia, but just the number of conflicts of interest that take place or exist within this administration have concerned me. And it seemed as though no one was paying attention, no one cared. And the thought of someone using public office to line their pockets and funnel money into their businesses, look, we all know that there's severe corruption going on. But he takes it to another level. It's incredible because the corruption that we currently have in this country that has been legalized isn't good enough for him. He needs to take it further. So I love that this investigation is broadening in scope. And so a single anonymous source familiar with this probe told Bloomberg that federal investigators are now interested in financial dealings involving Trump, his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, and White House advisor, Jared Kushner, Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross, and his former campaign chairman, Paul Manafort. And so they are specifically looking at a number of things, actually. Russian purchases of apartments in Trump buildings. That's the reason why Trump decided to mention the fact that, maybe I sold some condos to Russians. Who knows? I sell a lot of condos. Trump's involvement in a controversial Soho development with Russian associates, 2013 Miss Universe pageant in Moscow, Trump's sale of a Florida mansion to a Russian oligarch in 2008. So these are all issues that Mueller is now looking into, and he does not seem deterred by Donald Trump's statements to the New York Times.
This is an administration awash in conflict, right? You can stay at the Trump Hotel a stone's throw from the White House and be helping the Trump organization in that way. And that's not just a theory. That's what's happened since he took office. In fact, most foreign dignitaries and their attaches and entourages, they stay in that Trump hotel. Why? Because why stay at the Mandarin Oriental when you can stay at the Trump hotel and say, yeah, we had a great stay at your hotel last night? I mean, that's happening, and it's not happening in small numbers. It's been a boon to that hotel. But his conflicts, as far as the real estate empire are concerned, are really remarkable because that's where you can launder money, and it's a good old-fashioned way to launder money, where a lot of money is paid in excess of whatever the appraised value of a property might be.
Yes,
and that's a way now that you're giving somebody money and also laundering money. I think.
Oh, don't even get me started on that, Mark. Don't even get me started on that, because think about it, okay. I've been following, foreign investments into U.S. properties because of how insane the housing market is, right? And it drives me nuts because, yeah, they do it to launder money. And so if they're spending over market value for properties, what do you think that happens to the rest of the market? The rest of the market is artificially inflated, right? And so people, hardworking Americans, America first, because that's what he really cares about, are unable to afford homes in places where homes used to be pretty affordable. That's what's happening right now. And it's because of his cronies, it's because of Jared Kushner and his family traveling to China and encouraging people to invest $250,000 or more in their properties so they can get the golden visa and their ticket to America. Like, that's the stuff that should infuriate his base.
The only thing that is good about what's happening is that it's also ham-fisted. It's all clunky. It's all noticeable. I mean, there's no elegance to the Trump con. And by the way, there was no elegance, though, to the Trump con to become president of the United States. And that's one of the reasons I didn't think it would ever happen. It just seems so clunky. But in the investigation of a conflict of interest, there's that same clunkiness. And I think ultimately there's going to be a lot revealed here. I think Jared Kushner and his associates will maybe the first to be exposed.
Possibly. But, their clunkiness, I think, is a symptom of being brought up in a country where if you have certain resources, you're above the law, right? You don't have to answer to anyone. You don't face the same consequences that most average Americans have to face. And so, yeah, why wouldn't they be transparent and incredibly obvious about their shady dealings if all they've ever known is being above the law?
Yeah, that's a great point. They really have never had to answer to the law because of that strata of society. But also, the real estate world is filled with this kind of thing.
Oh,
there
yes,
are payoffs and all kinds of deals in the real estate world. As you can imagine, a real estate deal of hundreds of millions of dollars has this to the nth degree. So they're really used to this kind of thing. And then when something's found, as Anna says, they just handle like, oh, yeah, I did meet with that Russian guy the one time. Yeah, oh, the two times there was a Russian guy and there was one other guy there. I mean, and then that can, there are three other guys there. But I mean, and it continues. But they just are used to answering after the fact. I think they bring a lot of that real estate world where anything goes. I think they bring a lot of that to the presidency.
So I really want to comment I guess, compare and contrast two different components of the Russian story, right? Because I think a lot of people are frustrated that oftentimes when you hear from Democrats, establishment Democrats, they're hyper focused and hyper obsessed with the DNC emails, right? And so when we talk about collusion, you know, the first thing that some establishment Democrats go to is, oh yeah, the DNC emails. And look, that's bad, okay? I agree that's bad. But for me, what's much more concerning are the business dealings, right? That's where I want the focus to be. That's where I want, you know, the FBI's resources to go. And I want to find out if there were, you know, pay to play situations going on, if there were some financial dealings happening, you know, in order to persuade Trump to do certain things, or if Trump is helping foreigners launder money in his properties. Like, that's unacceptable. Anyone else who does that would face consequences. So for me, that's the real issue. Again, the DNC stuff, the emails, yeah, whatever. It's bad.
Yeah, they almost look quaint by comparison.
This is much worse. And so if Democrats genuinely care about messaging, and it seems like they don't, they seem more obsessed with the fact that, you know, Trump won and Hillary lost. But if they genuinely care about justice and making sure that you hold Trump's feet to the fire, this is where your messaging should be. This is where you should be focusing and ensuring that some form of justice gets carried out.
Yeah. No, yeah. I think the conflict of interest thing also is a different way to message, and would be a smart way to message, because the Russia thing, people are burning out on some level. They're not really focusing and distinguishing what part of the Russia investigation is what. And I also think that the right-wing media, and they do a good job in this country, that's all talk radio and that's Fox News Channel and all the rest, they do a good job of ignoring the Russia thing. They put it all in the same category, so that changes in the Russia story are not really represented to an entire audience. Now, that audience might be lost anyway. They might not, you know. But I think it's a clever idea to change the messaging. So we're talking about conflict of interest.
We're talking about how this screws Americans over, right? Instead of focusing on how it screwed the Democrats over. Because let me tell you something, you're not going to convince members of his base to switch over and support Democrats by saying, oh, we didn't like what happened with Russia because of what happened to the poor Democrats. They don't care. But what they do care about is how this impacts their day-to-day lives, how it is that someone that they elected actually isn't interested in representing them, but is interested in, you know, using his you know, business ventures or whatever to profit as much as humanly possible.
Yeah, and the other thing that the Democrats could do is get off of their jihad about getting those voters over. You probably aren't going to get a lot of them.
Yeah.
And get back to representing the people. I mean, you can really be a party of the people right now. There's an opportunity here, a political opportunity that can be exploited. But I think Democrats are still slow to that party as well.
Yes. All right. We're switching gears to a really sad story. So let's do it. News recently broke in regard to Senator John McCain's health condition. If you guys can recall, he was in the hospital to remove a blood clot. And unfortunately, through that process, doctors learned that his condition was actually a lot more serious. So according to reports, the Mayo Clinic, where McCain is being treated, announced Wednesday night that doctors had discovered a form of brain cancer. It's known as glioblastoma, an aggressive brain cancer. McCain and his family are considering treatment options, which may include chemotherapy or radiation. So I listened to an interview with a doctor who's, you know, close to the situation, and he said that this is one of the most malignant forms of cancer, and it's not looking good. But we do know that John McCain is a fighter, and he has tweeted and thanked people for their support and just showed how much of a fighter he really is. He says, I greatly appreciate the outpouring of support. Unfortunately, for my sparring partners in Congress, I'll be back soon, so stand by. So look, you might not agree with everything John McCain has done. You might not agree with his voting record, whatever it is, it doesn't matter. He's a human being. He's a principled human being at that, you know? And he has had some good moments that I'm proud of. Go ahead.
We were talking before the show started about McCain, and I don't think any of us are particular fans of his policies and but he did serve the country, and he was, as you know, at Hanoi Hilton, he was a prisoner of war. But more to the point, more to Anna's point, During his campaign for president, you'll recall that they had one of those big town hall meetings, and one of the women who was at the town hall stood up, elderly lady, and she said, this Barack Obama, he's un-American. I think she mentioned Muslim, but she was just throwing all these invectives out. And McCain shook his head no vigorously and waited for her to stop and then took the microphone and said, no, Barack Obama is a fine American. I disagree with him on policy, but he's a fine American and he wants to represent this country in the best way that he knows how. That is the grace and the honorable style of John McCain.
I miss that. Yeah. I miss that. That level of civility, right? Instead of the constant mudslinging. And when I say he's principled, I really mean it, because he's not necessarily someone who just wants to be loyal to his party. I mean, he's called Trump out. He's called other Republicans out. He's disagreed with other Republicans very openly and transparently. And I have a lot of respect for that, even if I don't agree with him on anything, on everything. There are some things I do agree with him on, believe it or not.
There are few things that I agree with him on. Yeah. He's never met a war he didn't like and all of that stuff. But I agree 100%.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a time where you know your heart breaks for him and his family.
His family, yeah.
And he is a man of honor and grace, and it is in very short supply right now in the political dialogue.
Absolutely. All right. I'm sorry to leave you guys with that sad story as we go to break, but we will be back. We'll read your TYT lives, and I'm going to tell you what the House is planning on doing to roll back even more environmental regulations. Stay tuned. Hey guys, welcome back to TYT. I want to read a few TYT lives for you. Megan says, I don't agree with John McCain on most of his policy ideas, but he's one of the few Republicans I have respect for, or any respect for. Yeah, I agree with you. You know, there's something about him that makes you respect him, even if you disagree. It's like this civil disagreement, which you don't get much of in
politics. I think we look at that as a breath of fresh air. There is no denying, and we'll say it again, and we said it before. I said he never met a war he didn't like, and I mean it. He's a warmonger. He has a shameful record on our involvement in Iraq and a shameful record in other places as well. Having said all of that and said it emphatically, my heart does break for a man who gets this diagnosis. And he has served the public as well as he has been able and as honorably as he feels he can.
Right. So. Also, look, the tweets that we get are chosen by someone on our staff. And so I read my personal tweets every once in a while during the breaks, and I come across more critical tweets as a result of that. And someone was complaining that we talk about the Russia story. So I wanna be absolutely clear to everyone who's watching, we will cover the Russia story and no one's gonna stop us. If you don't like the Russia story, if you don't think it's important, I'm sorry. We don't focus on it for the majority of our show, but we will cover it. And if that makes you uncomfortable, I don't know why. I don't know why that makes you uncomfortable. It's a huge story. So
it's funny that we get that. This is sort of what we were talking about.
Yeah.
That people kind of put Russia all in the same category when it just revealed that the president and Putin had a private conversation for an hour. I mean, is that's new information? Is that information that we shouldn't share? Is that information that we shouldn't remark on?
Yeah.
I mean, the Russia story is changing. It's not just a one-note story.
Yeah, exactly. And all components of it are worth talking about, whether it's the DNC emails or these conflicts of interest or money laundering and all this shady stuff going. Really? You don't want to talk about that? You don't want to learn anything about that? Okay.
We just as a country have backed off of our backing of the rebels in Syria, and that is thought to be something that the Russians would have wanted us to do. Mm-hmm. We have backed away from our support for those rebels. Now, is that linked to the Russian story in some greater? I don't know. We really don't know yet. There's tough to get total clarity on that point. But again, in the biggest picture, these are important things that do change the Russian story day to day. So it's worth certainly visiting.
Yeah, I mean, it's hilarious where it's like, don't cover that story. Well, that's what we do for work. We cover stories that are important to talk about. So anyway, moving on. The EPA and members of Congress are fighting tooth and nail to deregulate any policy in regard to the environment. Now, that was one of the first things that Trump did as soon as he got inaugurated. It was very clear that they were not in favor of some of the environmental policy that President Obama had championed. But they're going even further, so I want to give you the details on that. So next month, the EPA is planning to make final delays to a handful of regulations that it plans to either revise or repeal. Standards for water pollution from power plants, methane pollution limits for landfills, and also methane limits for oil and gas drilling. Now, these are very friendly moves toward the oil and gas companies. And of course, these oil and gas companies fund these politicians handsomely. And so in the Interior Department, the administration said it plans to publish formal proposals this month to repeal two contentious Obama rules. I don't know why they're contentious.
They're not.
Yeah. One is regulating fracking on federal land, and one regarding methane emissions from oil and gas drilling on federal land. The only people who feel like these regulations are contentious are the companies that are profiting off of polluting our environment. I think most American people understand the importance of protecting our environment unless they're working in these industries themselves. And so, look, it's sad news. And just when you think they're finally going to leave some of the regulations in place, maybe they go even further. So,
and these are protections for water and air and land that needs to be protected. So this is one of the most disturbing things about Donald Trump. When people talk about his legislative agenda not really being served and him not really getting a whole lot done as his administration gets to the 6-month mark and all this sort of thing, he's actually gotten a lot of stuff done this way, through executive order, and he's taken aim on the environment because he's been able to do it quickly. And as Anna says, in service of all these huge companies that stand to gain so much. And by the way, these are not all American companies either, if you just care about the bottom line. But as far as I'm concerned, our bottom line should be the land, the water, and the air. It desperately needs protection. This is not a partisan issue, but it has become a partisan issue. This should be bipartisan because that Water Act.
Because we all drink that water. I don't know. We all breathe the air. We all, you know, depend on the environment being safe and sound and healthy for us to live in.
That clean water rule, I think it affects 17 million or maybe the number 70 million Americans. I mean, it's as you say, it's a lot of people breathing that air and drinking that water. But again, the reason they went after it is because Obama's name is on it, and Trump wants to undo anything that has Obama's name on it. And it's sadly going to be the environment.
Yeah. All right. Finally, story that we typically do an hour or two, but it was just, we couldn't fit it in. So I wanted to make sure we talked about it today because it shows you just how far the injustice system will go. A Baltimore police officer is suspended and is also facing an investigation after he accidentally filmed himself planting drugs, or at least it appears that he's planting drugs. The investigation will determine whether or not he did so intentionally. So I want to show you guys the video very quickly. There's no sound, but you can kind of pay attention to him going to the scene of where he alleged to have found the drugs. So he walks away from the scene. This is after he planted the drugs. It was a baggie full of pills that had heroin.
Now he's turning it off.
No, now he thinks he's turning it on.
Yeah.
So he didn't realize the camera was already on when he planted the drugs. Now he's going back to the scene where he planted the drugs to pretend like he found it.
Not here. No, not there. Where is it?
At least he takes a little bit of time to pretend like he, you know, doesn't know where the drugs are.
He's done this before.
Yeah, right, exactly. He's rehearsed this.
And there it is. Bag of drugs.
So those were capsules that were filled with heroin. And luckily, he did get caught, and it's because of his own negligence. He didn't realize that he was filming himself planting the drugs. The public defender's office identified the officer handling the drugs in the video as Richard Pinero and complained that he was a witness in dozens of other active cases. And that's really, you know, something that should concern everyone, because there are a number of other cases where he claims to have, you know, found contraband or found drugs or illicit things. And so these cases are now really going to be brought to question because of, you know, his lack of credibility here.
And it hurts police work that's being done on the streets every day, right? And just as police violence hurts all the good cops. And in this particular instance, one officer has been suspended. Two officers have been placed on administrative duty while they look at this. But boy, it's pretty clear what's going on here.
Right. So the two cops that were placed on administrative duty were the cops who were present as this was happening. And so if they were complicit in what happened, I think they should be suspended as well. I mean, that means that they're totally okay with this type. You are planting drugs, which will potentially ruin the life of an innocent person. Right? And just so incredibly stupid, so stupid. And so, yeah, look, I hope that the investigation, you know, tries to get to the bottom of what's going on. But the lawyer who's representing him is trying to make the case that maybe he didn't plant drugs. Maybe he was just trying to show, you know, police work in action, like what it was like when he discovered that. What? That's not even a good defense, but I don't know. We'll see. They're going to do the investigation and we'll.
They're throwing up everything against the wall and see what sticks for sure when they come up with that one.
Right.
So this tactic is age old, as I assume everyone would know. Comedians talk about it in joking ways, like, oh, the police drop some drugs and it's, oh, sprinkle some crack on them, as Dave Chappelle said years ago. And it was just ha, funny, but it's been happening for so long. And then people are supposed to be pacified by, oh, we're going to give body cameras and an accountability. And after we do that, police are going to know. We're going to see everything that they're really doing. And as we see, even in manipulating the body camera footage, you then go, I think I turned it off. So the way, I don't know if you explained it fully, the way it works with, he thought it was off.
Yes, he did.
Because he turned it off, but there's apparently a 30-second buffer where it records what happened 30 seconds before or keeps a loop. So when you turn it back on, it still kept the 30 seconds previous. So it kept what he did. So I don't know why there's buttons on the body cam footage that's supposed to make sure that there's accountability if they can just turn it off and on.
Agreed.
And with every other case, they go, oh, our dash cam's off, our body camera's off, but someone ended up dead. I don't know how it happened.
Agreed.
This is how it happens.
I agree with you. I agree that when you give them the ability to turn them on and off, like, of course, you're going to have instances of abuse. But someone actually, a columnist, brought up a really, really great point about body cameras. And I think the reason why it's important to have that feature is because, let's say a woman has just, or anyone has just been sexually assaulted or abused in any way, and they don't want to be on camera, right? They call the cops and they feel uncomfortable being on camera. And so I think having that option is important and it's good. But I think that there should be heavy scrutiny when there's a cop-related shooting of an unarmed person. And oh, what a coinkydink. The dash cam camera wasn't working, or the dash cam wasn't working, and my body cam wasn't working either. I mean, that seems very
suspicious.
To be suspicious.
Feeling better about this. I remember what happened on this show. Cenk and I were talking about how, okay, well, at least there's going to be this accountability. I feel better. People who know how these things happen know that we weren't going to feel better about this. It's just, there's too much evidence and too much previous bad intent that's built up for people to believe that it's not going to happen the way we're seeing it happen. But even after we see it happen, we're still going to go, well, it was just him. What about the other two cops standing there? Didn't look very startling to them. Sure. You didn't see one of their hand gestures go, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Stop. Like, dude, that didn't happen.
Whoa. Yeah.
The dozens of other cases he's been on, how many other cops have watched this? It's no such thing as a couple of bad apples. I'm going to just put it out there. For them to keep seeing this happen and go, oh, well, it's just body cam footage. He can turn it off and on. Why give him that option? It's disgusting.
I am also tortured by the sexual abuse part of the body cam situation. Mm-hmm. But having said that, and I'll get to maybe a solution for that in a second, I think it's got to be on all the time. Mm-hmm. And by the way, it could be an innocent thing, you know, that they forget to turn the body cam on. I mean, so it's not always that they're trying to, that they're up to something nefarious. And I'm wondering, in the case of a sexual abuse situation, mm-hmm. where they can call in, or you know, quickly, the way you get a warrant, they can get a warrant over the phone or over the radio really quickly, and they could get some kind of special approval mm-hmm. to turn the camera off. I think that's what the category that has to fall into. Mm-hmm. It's too valuable, I think. And I know, JR, that it's going on all the time, but this body cam does represent at least a chance to keep cops honest and also to help cops out in situations where they say, no. The guy was charging at me, right, or whatever it may be.
Yeah, I know. I think, you know, if you are a cop with good intentions, and there are plenty of them out there, I mean, having that evidence on you to prove that you didn't do anything nefarious is important. So, you know, I do really quickly want to touch on what you said, JR, because, again, I totally agree with you. It's not just the cop that was planning the drugs. It was also the two cops with him who were just totally okay with what was going on. They are on administrative leave or whatever, right? Or administrative duty. They haven't even been suspended. And so that kind of sends the message that they're probably not gonna face any serious consequences for this. And I think they should. You're messing with innocent people's lives, especially in this crazy culture where drug use is criminalized and we have these insane draconian, you know, sentences for drug abusers. Like, it's insane.
And even if you look at it as, well, they're not an innocent person, they're trying to, they planted this to tag another guy who was a known drug dealer, I get it, but tag him with the stuff that is actual evidence against him.
Do real investigative work and catch him doing something illegal. I mean, the case, by the way, this was totally counterproductive because the case has been completely dropped against the person that they're planting the evidence against. And it should be.
Right.
It should be. You can't plant evidence. All right, we gotta go take a break, but we will be back with hour two. Brett Ehrlich will join us, and you don't wanna miss it. Michelle Bachmann is back, and she is cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs.
The Bach is back.
Oh God, you don't wanna miss it. You don't wanna miss it. All right, so tweet to us using the hashtag TYT Live, and we will be back in just a few.